Welcome to PSM, the Professional Services Marketing Podcast. It's insight applied. And now, here's Brad and Scully.
Hello and welcome to PSM. If it's about professional services marketing, we'll be covering it here. I'm Brad Entwistle and this is episode 98 for Friday, August 25, 2017. Scully, on the other side of Australia, how are you, my friend?
I am in fine form indeed. The sun is shining for the first time in months.
And this is Perth we're talking about.
I know.
A couple of days of rain and, you know, you get all wintered in.
I know. We're very blessed here. But professional services marketing is what it's all about, and I'm pumped heaps to talk about.
This is PSM. It's insight applied.
And so to news that you can use, and this was a headline that I figured was written for banks, but operationalizing customer intimacy is key to a consistent brand experience, but much harder than you think. So writes Pip Stocks, who is the CEO and founder at Brand Hooks. And the basis of the article is that most people think that powerful customer experiences, or CX, if you're on the inside, starts with a customer-centric CEO. And Pips agrees, gives it the big tick, that customer intimacy and getting to know your clients voice-to-voice and face-to-face, as she says, makes a much bigger impact on the business than looking at the customer through numbers. But then goes on to say, well, that's harder than you think. What did you think of the article's headline first?
That's a seriously long headline. And I had to think long and hard about it. Operationalizing customer intimacy. Well, okay. It's being nice to people and actually getting on with them. You know what? Cut through marketing, whatever you cut through. There's very little more important. And in terms of professional services, it is imperative. You know, people buy people. They're buying that advice, but they're buying a relationship. And very often, it's a vulnerable place talking with an accountant or whatever it may be, and they want to know that they're dealing with someone they can trust and they can relate to. Really important.
So the article does talk about operationalizing customer intimacy, which is getting close to your clients. And one of the keys, very Pip here talks about CEOs, but insert managing partner, motivate the organization with the CEO's strategic customer vision. I don't know how many professional services firms, Scully, have a strategic customer vision.
I sincerely hope many. I fear hardly any. It's a great call, though. So let's get on the same score sheet. That's the wrong word. Let's just agree with one another. What is the vision? So what do we want to do here? What do we want to achieve in terms of the integrity of the firm, in terms of the values of the firm? And we need everyone to be across that so that we're really able to communicate. And very often it doesn't happen at all. So let's presume there is a strategic vision. It's so important that that is communicated down, and so important that the marketing department, communications department, whatever it may be, is involved in almost the essence of that, permeating through everything outreaching, but importantly within the culture of the firm as well. Because unless it talks again, wonderful marketing speak, mapping the experience from customer perspective and delivery methods. It basically, that means unless you know the touch points when your potential clients, existing clients are interacting with you in your firm, you can sometimes not get your messages across and get really what you're all about across to them. So make sure you know how to communicate with them and when, because every single member of your team, no matter how big or small, has a vital job to get across customer intimacy, being real, being decent, being good people.
And so to do that, she's suggesting one of the ways to achieve it is to train your people to deliver it. And she makes a really valid point, I think, that when people talk about great customer experience, they inevitably talk about people who are at the coalface, the front line. And whether that's somebody in a call center, a shop assistant, somebody at an airline, or indeed a bank teller. Her point being that if the people who are on the coalface, at the floor, talking face-to-face with clients, don't have permission to make decisions in those moments that matter, then the CEO's vision will not come to fruition at all. And she finishes up by saying, when she asks people about their most favourite trend that is coming, a lot of people talk about AI, artificial intelligence. It's all the rage. Everybody's talking about it in the industry at the moment, even though very few actually know what it is. And indeed,
even weapons manufacturers.
Yes. But, you know, using it to predict customers and clients' behavior and integrating it into the service offering. But without a fully operational and consistent brand experience, AI and all other trends will fail. Get that right and you'll win the customer experience battleground and you have your competitive edge. Absolutely. Really, Scully, is she saying much more than take care of your clients and take care of those interaction moments?
Yeah, I find it vaguely reassuring, actually, that you really can't beat that customer experience, the value of it. Love them, nurture them, make them feel special. Work your magic with them because it's the most effective thing there is.
Just talking about customer experience or CX in the trade, and we're moving over to UX, which stands for user experience. We're marketing speaking ourselves out here, but the headline is marketing email and newsletters, UX findings then and now. So this is an article by Nielsen Norman Group and one of the user experience specialists there. Now, Nielsen Norman Group are the go-to gurus for user experience, which is about essentially anything that's happening online, happening on a screen, big screen, small screen. And these are the guys who have been doing research for a long time. They started researching newsletters back in 2002, so 25 years ago. And since then, they've done 6 large-scale studies on newsletters and marketing emails. And they say the changes in this latest study are fairly dramatic, but a few things that I thought really useful to touch on. The view of the, you know, the consumers of the newsletters, the receivers, there is fewer formal subscriptions, and that's because the subscribing to a newsletter used to be an event. It was a substantial commitment and therefore it was a deliberate choice. Now, not so much. You know, many of the concerns about that users had about subscribing to emails have disappeared, mostly all of those fears of people selling your emails and that sort of stuff. It's a bit of a reminder of how far we've come.
Oh, haven't we? It's actually, it's quite quaint to look back at some of these things. And look, for content marketing, inbound marketing, The email and newsletter are amazing tools, and to see how they've evolved is extraordinary. Another part of that is the evolution of spam. And one of my favorite lines of the day is spam is in the eye of the beholder. Indeed, who is to say what is spam isn't spam, and some people do view them differently. But it's been a huge concern. Nobody wants their newsletter to become spam-like or to be perceived as spam.
Well, it's interesting even how the term spam has changed. In the beginning, it was any unsolicited email that landed in the inbox. But now it's, as you say, in the eye of the beholder, and it's anything that's irrelevant. So you could be considered spam even though that recipient has signed up and requested your email newsletters.
Totally. I've now, as part of my routine, look in my spam box more regularly than ever because there's things that I really enjoy seem to still get in there, even though some of my filters are overcooked at times, but I still take great joy in receiving them. So, yeah, nobody wants to be perceived as spam, but one man's spam is another man's fillet steak.
I was going to say, is what? Where were you going with that one? So the emotional connection is another thing that they touched on very briefly. And there is just so much in this article. If you are doing an email newsletter or email marketing in your firm, you really should have a good read of this article. The link is in the show notes. But on the question of emotional connections, it seems to be a lot about personalization now. So newsletters that delivered highly personalized and relevant content at the right time received the most positive emotional responses from the recipients that they were studying. And they were liking the emails because, to quote one of the the people who were being studied, it's something that I'm interested in, helps me feel creative and productive. So that was their response to one particular email. There's fewer concerns about unsubscribing or the ability to unsubscribe. So just like in the past, there was, if you like, a high threshold, a high bar to jump to get people to subscribe. Now people are much happier that they can unsubscribe very easily.
Yeah. Another thing you're talking about, layouts. I mean, this research goes back a long time, more than 10 years. And when they started looking, everything was designed for the desktop screen. Now, of course, it's gone the other way. Mobile devices are so important. Everything has to be user-friendly there. And actually, sometimes that's become clunky on a desktop. So a large monitor can make things look, whoa, really overly complex or even overly simplistic. It's an ever-evolving art, but it still is an incredibly powerful one. The growth of visual communication is such that the imagery that's being used and basically just better design makes newsletters work so much harder.
And of course, back in the day, you remember when we were doing those email newsletters that took days to get together and format, and then you never knew how they were going to look at the other end. But we were very concerned about the file size. Well, their research is suggesting that we should still be concerned about the file size, because increasingly people are viewing these emails and receiving them on their mobile device. They are concerned about the amount of data that they chew up. So keeping the file sizes under control is still important, although for somewhat different reasons.
Yeah, that's right. Look, at the end of the day, there's also a nice phrase talking about Snapchat being the toddler-aged internet media for, as opposed to the established, almost geriatric email. But emails are still work. They're not an aging media form. They're a superb way to stay in touch with your customers. They have just got better and better. So make sure you're using the latest techniques, because they work all the better.
And at the risk of sounding as though we're harping on this, but at the end of the day, as we've said time and time again, don't build your house, your marketing house, on rented land, which is other people's platforms, their social media platforms. They own those, you don't. At the end of the day, there's only two online properties that you own, and these are like hotels on Mayfair. They are the Little Red Hotel. Is that still a thing in Monopoly, Little Red Hotels?
I believe so.
But this is your website and your email list. They are the two things. So treat them with the respect they deserve and use them wisely, and they'll perform for you. And so did news item number three, which is at the other end of the academic spectrum, I sort of point out, with the headline, 8 Writing Tips I Wish I Knew Before I Started Blogging. And this is from Clifford Chi, who is a marketing intern at HubSpot.
You can tell he's young. I shouldn't have to say, I wish I had known.
His first line in the blog is, I wrote my first blog 2 summers ago. Anybody who measures time in summers clearly is too young. I mean, 10 points to him. I mean, HubSpot's doing a good job by having marketing interns and giving them a crack. And look at it. Clifford is being discussed on PSM.
And he makes some great points. He does make some
absolutely
good points. He's come a long way. And part of that, he's cut out a word in that headline that I might have added by being an old pedant. One of his tips is trim the fat. And he's right, you know, make it concise, because that's the concentration threshold is limited. And so, yeah, keep it as lean as you can.
We'll bolt through some of these. But the reason that this caught our eye, actually, is that while it's from a young buck writer, 2 summers under his belt in writing blogs, but he's not only has he done a good job, he's learnt some of the basic tools, which it doesn't matter whether we've been writing for 2 summers or 35 summers. It is really good to go back and just examine. Are we doing that, or are we getting into a place where we're comfortable and lazy in our copywriting? But his point number two, one sentence should only cover one idea. So true. A clear sentence that is easy to understand covers just one main idea. And he also suggests using the Hemingway app, which we've featured in our Cool Tools segment before and on our Cool Tools on our website. But I use the Hemingway app, and I don't actually write in the Hemingway app. I tend to write in Word or something else, but then copy it into the Hemingway app and just see how I've done. And usually I get a sea of red, as it suggests to things where I could be more precise.
There are some that would say the red is good, but no, you're learning, Brad. Your copy is very good. Sentences don't live in isolation. They don't. And, you know, sometimes you'd be so proud of a sentence. It's a good point to draw to our attention. Use the same word in consecutive sentences and you get in all sorts of a muddle. You might think it works here, but if you repeat yourself, it just doesn't scan well. Vary a language and cut the repeat information. Keep it succinct.
And the same applies to the sentence length and structure. You can get into a rhythm of, if you're concentrating on, for instance, writing on short sentences, which are great, but if you write all in short sentences, it's not great. It becomes very boring copy. And he's got a great example there of that. Scrap the cliches. To me, that would go without saying. Cliches don't really have a place. And indeed, buzzwords. I totally agree there. Buzzwords like leverage, for instance, synergy, and some of those business buzzwords, they have all the same effect. He makes a really good point about appealing to the senses and even quotes some study from Emory University that when you can use concrete details to appeal to readers' senses, it paints a more vivid picture with words that people actually respond to. And the study, have a look at the article, the link's in the show notes, but quotes this research where they show that just using the right words, it can light up different areas of the brain as the brain responds to it.
Yeah, and perhaps just to emphasize a really good one for a perspective, take a break. So just don't just read it and send it, read and dispatch. I know it's busy and taking a day off and coming back is a luxury that kind of never really happens or very rarely. But if you get someone else to look at your copy, great. And if you can't get that, then at least walk away, do something else. You may not have time to just have a break altogether, but it's a fresh pair of eyes. Once you've worked on something else, come back and reread it. It makes the world of difference. Don't get hung up on certain bits of copy. Let them go. If it, you know, you feel actually when you go back and I'm forcing it in there, it's got to flow well. So yeah, great tips. Well done, him.
This is PSM. It's insight applied.
Each episode of recent times, we've been introducing you to one of the Image 7 team. And last time John Eggleston joined us, we learnt that his nickname was Eggles. So John, sorry to bring that up again, but Scully, take it away. We're talking about live streaming.
Yes, Jiggles. Now, tell me, live streaming, it's all the talk. You hear about it, you read about it. Before we even get into why a professional service firm should even think about it, what is it exactly?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Live streaming is basically just streaming audio and visual to, or broadcasting it to an audience that is watching it as you send it.
Uh-huh. Hence the word live. Get it. So, all right, get my head around the technical side to a degree. But okay, I'm a professional services firm. It all sounds a bit scary. Why would I even think about live streaming?
Great question. So live streaming is particularly good because it is a quick, engaging, free source of content. You don't have to spend time creating videos and paying for editors. You can just film it and send it yourself. It's also really great because it's transparent and you can offer interaction with the people viewing.
So what exactly are some of the things that a professional services firm could stream live?
Yeah, good question. So one that I like to suggest is an office tour. So you could show the viewers all around your new office or maybe the break room, the lunch room. Another one is maybe some sort of walkthrough of your services. If you have a new program that you're offering, you could explain how this could help the client. Yeah, and that sort of thing.
Okay, I like the idea of bringing a sort of personality of your office. Your people buy people, they really do. So the idea of bringing personality to that. And also there's a great opportunity, I think, for streaming. A lecture might be a bit of a heavy word, but a presentation with a real opportunity to sort of demonstrate leadership or thought leadership or authority. Okay, so imagine we've got one of those events. What are some of the tips for first-time live streamers?
So definitely the best tip I can offer is plan your stream. So make sure that you've got the structure of the video all worked out before you start so that there's no big awful gaps or times wondering what's going on. Another one is prepare filling material. So if you do have to have those sorts of gaps, say if you're setting something up, then prepare a little speech, something that you can talk about, advertise your services. Another great one is ensure that you have a solid internet connection so you don't want to be dropping in and out halfway through the stream. And a final one is make sure you leave the stream with something for the viewers to contact you with. So a phone number, email number, some sort of call to action so that they know what you would like them to do next.
Fantastic. That's great. I can imagine applying it. Let's go forth and do it.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This is PSM. It's insight applied.
And now to our marketing example, which has quite literally, it is hot off the press. We've ditched what we were going to talk about as the marketing example, because just a couple of hours ago, one of the team, Tess, brought to our attention the Architects Marketing Institute. Scully, you've probably spent at least three more minutes looking at the website than I have. What can you tell us?
Well, they're in California, so that gives me an opportunity to go there. I think that's important. I pay them a visit. Now, I like that. Look, I think it's great that we've got an operator out there who's going sort of deep into a real niche, which is architects. So have a look at the website. Have a look at what they're saying. They're talking very much about training and empowering the marketer or the architect, if you like, to run their own marketing. So I agree with that. They're looking at helping big firms and plenty of small firms as well. There is such a range of skills needed, but architects is actually a big sector. And I think sometimes the one thing I like about this is that professional services firms still wrongly have a bit of an inferiority complex. And the fact that, this is my opinion in world of marketing, and the fact that someone is specializing not just in professional services firm, but in architects should give you great confidence to know this is a really fascinating area and a rich area for growth. As other firms get their act together, you make sure you're either on board and learning or moving ahead of them.
But I think, Scully, too, one of the things, just the principle behind the Architects Marketing Institute, which is a firm of consultants themselves, they've taken a training angle, but they've narrowed down on their market. They seem to know who their market is and they're going for it, something that all professional services firms could learn from, that in terms of not trying to be something to everybody.
This is PSM. It's insight applied.
And now to rants and raves, where we throw out a brickbat or a bouquet. And this one's got your name on it, Scully, an article by Bexy Cameron, who is the head of insight at Amplify. I just love some of the titles that these people have. I want one of these titles one day. Can I have a title like that? Amplify is an integrated marketing company, and this has been reported in Contagious. And the opinion piece, as it is labelled Unlocking Influence. So are you ranting or are you raving?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both.
We don't have to get both. All right, go on. Execute on this one. Rant and rave in the same piece.
The topic I'm raving about. I think the power of an influencer is a really, really good tool. If you can capture that, and they're using unlocking the influence, I don't think that's powerful enough. It should be unleashing the influence, because if you can get the right partners, the right influencers to talk about your firm, to talk about how impressed they are, or to partner with them, to use them to present to your clients, or even just training in your own staff, that is really powerful. And I think it's a great opportunity that's untapped thus far in professional services marketing. So I urge you to think about who within your community or prospective community of clients would be influential, and really the sort of halo effect from their presence would bring to you real credibility. But the flip side is a lot of this stuff is done on Instagram. It's done to sell makeup. It's done to sell all sorts. It's Kim Kardashian. That's a sort of tarnish on a lot of this influencer. And it has been tarnished. So the way the article's written is a little bit glitzy, if you like. But I did like the fact that they talked about the reality now. We've got a real tech-savvy group of, well, world out there who know about personas. They may not articulate it like that. They know that there's the online digital persona and then the real persona. So when you ally, form a strategic alliance with a potential influencer, be careful that you know all there is about them. Because just because you're selling makeup, that might not be a problem.
This is the first time we've got makeup into professional services.
But if you're selling legal services, a brand with real integrity, then you need to be careful who you're tying up with. I still love the idea of influencing and using third parties to help your credibility, but it does come with a health warning.
This is PSM. It's insight applied.
And that health warning almost brings us to the end of episode 98 of Professional Services Marketing. Now, if you're listening from the Image 7 website, you can pop over into your favourite podcast player and subscribe for your fortnightly dose of professional services marketing goodness. Just search for PSM, Professional Services Marketing, and you'll find us there. Now, if you've got any questions, some comments, marketing examples, or a rant or rave of your own, you can email us at psm@image7.com.au. And that is it for this episode of PSM from Scully and myself, Brad Entwistle. Bye for now.
Goodbye.